We are Cambridge 105.
Welcome to In Your Company, the fortnightly business show on Cambridge 105, presented by me, Sam Davis. Today, we are continuing our exploration of the Cambridge phenomenon, the world-renowned cluster of technology businesses in our local area. In our last show, we looked at the origins of the phenomenon and its development over the last 50 years. As we heard, over 1,500 companies and over 50,000 employees are now identified as being part of the phenomenon, and it has given rise to 13 companies, each with a stock market valuation of more than $1 billion. In today's show, we're focusing on the next generation of entrepreneurs and their plans for the future. Whether the companies led by today's interviewees will reach the dizzy heights achieved by Arm or autonomy is uncertain. But their chances of doing so are enhanced by the unique platform which now exists in Cambridge for creating and growing technology businesses, and which brings together a rich stream of intellectual property, access to varied sources of finance, and infrastructure specifically developed to nurture early stage businesses. Clearly, one of the key drivers in bringing these strands together is the University of Cambridge. To get a perspective on its contribution, I spoke to Peter Hiscox, entrepreneur in residence at the University's Centre for Entrepreneurial Learning, part of the Judge Business School. Peter has a background in technology consulting, is the founder and director of several technology companies, is the chairman of a £20 million seed fund that helps business startups, and is an active business angel himself. He also spent 4 years as the director of Cambridge Enterprise, which is the university's technology commercialization arm. I started by asking him his thoughts on the current state of the phenomenon and how it's likely to develop.
Well, I think it's, in one way, one might say it's maturing, but that doesn't mean it's slowing down or losing its energy. What I think we're seeing is that on one hand, we're starting to get big multinational or rather global companies here in Cambridge, which are growing up from the new startups. One of the things I know people used to say about Cambridge in the 1980s and 1990s was, well, you've got lots of interesting small firms here, but you haven't got any big ones. Well, now we do have big ones. We've got firms that have grown and become very successful, but we still have lots of new businesses growing, and those new businesses, some of them we hope, I hope and expect, will grow into big firms in the future. I think what we're seeing is a more established and effective infrastructure and support systems to help new businesses get started. In the past, I certainly know from my experience, we used to have to sort of learn it all ourselves. And that's good in some ways, but a trial and error process often results in errors, and those can be painful and difficult, and certainly if they cause a business to fail, that causes a lot of blood, sweat and tears. If we look at new businesses and think, what are the important things we've got to do, then understanding how business works is obviously an essential part of it. Having a great idea is important. Having some sources of money to get started is important. But having a team of people that know and understand how to build a business is also important.
And is this where your involvement in the Judge Business School really kicks in?
If you start a new business, something that worries you is, God, what would happen if it goes wrong? One area of research that I look at here at Cambridge at the Business School is what causes businesses to fail? What causes new companies to fail? And we studied more than 2,500 companies in Europe to see what had been the cause of their failure. And they failed because the management team did not have the necessary management skills. And so here at the Business School, where I teach the entrepreneurship elements, we want to teach people what are the key management skills that you need to be more successful in running your company so that it's got a better chance of success and of growing. Now, that that background and that infrastructure didn't exist 25 years ago. And I think it the fact that it exists now will help new businesses and improve their probability of being successful.
And you have also played a key role in creating this infrastructure during your directorship of Cambridge Enterprise.
The university has had some great spin-outs in the past, but Cambridge Enterprise was set up to help structure this in a more effective way and make sure that there was a range of support mechanisms to help the new university spin-outs become more successful, and to help the technologies, they may not all be spin-outs, it might be licensing, to work more effectively. Another element that to help new ventures in the university is the establishment of a business incubator. We have IdeaSpace, which is set up in the Hauser Forum to support new business ventures spinning out from the university. And furthermore, we now have at the business school, just this last year, we've established Accelerate Cambridge, which is a business accelerator designed specifically to support new business ideas spinning out from the business school.
There's clearly a lot going on. In some senses, it sounds a little bit opaque, confusing potentially. How do people navigate through these different support mechanisms?
Everyone would have heard the expression, let a thousand flowers bloom. And what happens, I think, is we are the home of Darwin, and so we see Darwinism happen. There a lot of support mechanisms get started. Some of them will be successful, some of them less successful, and hopefully those that remain and survive will be those that have proven the test of time and effectiveness in how they support new ventures. So we can see St John's Innovation Centre, which has been for the past 30 years the best known place to go and start up a venture in Cambridge. And it has had such fantastic track record in supporting new businesses. And supporting new businesses, you know, it sounds as though the business, the entrepreneurs, you know, sit back and let other people do it. I think most of the support is about providing advice and guidance and maybe some training so that management skills can be built. But the entrepreneurs in every case will have to build that business themselves. They're going to have the passion, the energy. They're going to have to work 24/7 on this. And they'll have to put all their own commitment in to make it happen. But there are people there that they can go and ask for advice and help if they see things going wrong, or they see the new opportunities that they maybe like to exploit in different ways. So you still have to do it yourself. But there are people who can help you, which maybe there weren't so many people 25 years ago.
And is the university a little bit of a closed system, or are there ways that people who are not directly enrolled in university courses can find out some of the things that are happening? For example, I know the judge runs a series of public lectures, doesn't it? And anyone can attend those.
Yes. Some of the university programmes are, of course, part of courses that people have paid to undertake, and therefore you can't just turn up on the MBA class and sit in on the entrepreneurship lectures. But there are quite a lot of open programmes, and probably the best known is run by the Centre for Entrepreneurial Learning, and the session is called Enterprise Tuesdays, and that runs during term time at the university every Tuesday evening from 6 o'clock until about 9 o'clock. There'll be a lecture from a luminary in the business world talking about their own experiences and some key learnings about entrepreneurship. And then there'll be some discussion sessions and then the opportunity to network and meet with people afterwards. A great opportunity. And the Centre for Entrepreneurial Learning runs a range of other programmes that people from the community can join. One of the best things to do if you've got a business idea and you've already got started is to join the Centre for Entrepreneurial Learning's summer school, which is called Ignite, which runs every year at the beginning of July. And that's a 1 week long programme, which is a fantastic launch pad for new businesses to get started from.
As Peter's own track record demonstrates, there is now in Cambridge a generation of successful technology entrepreneurs who are willing to invest their time, money and experience in support of the following cohort. And my next interviewees are the beneficiaries of just such a relationship. Axol Bioscience is targeting the up-and-coming stem cell technology sector and was co-founded in January this year by Dr. Yi-Chin Chi, a Cambridge PhD student, and Dr. Jonathan Milner. As we will hear, Axol's story is a clear case of history repeating itself. Jonathan Milner was himself a bioscience researcher in 1998 when he identified a market opportunity for supplying high-quality antibodies on an e-commerce platform to scientists. His idea, developed in conjunction with serial entrepreneur David Cleveley, became Abcam. And Abcam now employs over 700 people and last year reported revenues of £120 million. I visited Axol's office on the Babraham Research Campus and spoke to Yi-Chin together with Marketing Director Naomi Wessel Carpenter.
Well, I come from China when I was 16. I came here to do my high school studies. After my high school studies, I went to the University of York to study biochemistry. But after my undergrad study, I came to Cambridge to pursue my studying in stem cell biology.
And that was back in about 2008, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and Naomi, you're here as the mouthpiece of Axol's marketing activity. I gather you are also a relatively recent arrival in Cambridge.
I am very new to Cambridge. I came here last year to join my husband, who is English and from this area and lives and works in the Cambridge community. And we decided that there were such wonderful opportunities in Cambridge that it would be better for me to come here and for me to make this my home.
Can we talk a little bit about Axol, about what it does, and about the route by which it came to be founded here?
Right. So I had this idea of commercializing the technology that I developed at my final year of my PhD. So I had this chance to meet Dr. Jonathan Milner, who was the founder of Abcam, during a career talk. I was sitting beside him. I was asking him about the lifestyle questions, about how to be an entrepreneur, after you're leaving your science career. And he gave me lots of suggestions. I had this idea of starting a cell supply business. And we wanted to be the Amazon of the cell supply industry.
Okay.
So at the time, there is a lot of demand for products like human cell types, different types of human, clinically important human cell types, like neural cells and cardiac cells and liver cells. These are used for drug testings and developing the new generation of cell therapies. So I was thinking, if we have the technology, what's the best route to go into the market? So I asked a series of questions to Jonathan, and he said, the best route to going to market is by providing a very strong e-commerce platform, which allow all these end users, can get information from your platform, right? The knowledge, and also all these very thorough characterization data of your products.
So this is effectively the route that he took with Abcam.
Yes.
So we're now looking to apply that kind of model to a new area of biotechnology.
Right. So Abcam used this route to market their antibody products. And we wanted to use the same route to market our stem cell products.
Jonathan's role in getting the company off the ground, I gather, has been quite critical.
Yes.
And has involved a certain amount of sitting in pubs, is that right?
Yes, actually we met during this career talk. After that, we went into a pub. I had a chance to tell him about my business idea. So we had this kind of spark, and I said, would you willing to provide some funding for the business to take off the ground? And he said, yes, why not? And we can give it a try, you know. He said he believed that the upcoming business model is reproducible, is transferable to other types of research reagent businesses.
And so since that initial conversation, he's not only put some funding into Axol, but he's also been very much an active mentor of you as the company's got going.
Yes, definitely. So I learned a lot from Jonathan, primarily through our Saturday morning meetings. So he's a very close mentor to me in terms of running the business, as well as how to deal with people, how to deal with investors, customers, you know, how to set up a company which has all these talented people contributing on different areas.
So with Axol now up and running, albeit as a fledgling business, I asked Naomi and Yichen about the scale of the enterprise and their plans for the future.
We have four of us full time, which is, I know it sounds like a small number, but everybody here, we really truly are a team. We work together for achieving our common goals.
So let's talk a little bit about what those goals are. Abcam, if we're using that as the model, has been hugely successful. You know, the last set of figures it returned, it's turning over 122 million a year, it's making 46 million pounds worth of profit. Do you think you're headed into that kind of scale of activity?
Definitely, because we see, you know, the stem cell market is even bigger than the antibody market. The stem cells can be applied to a very broad range of applications. For example, cell replacement therapies for degenerative disorders, for example, modern disease. So we get cells from patients, we convert them to the disease-affected tissue type, so they can be used to test different types of drugs. And also, the researchers are using the cells to study how the tissues form, how the tissues are differentiating, how the tissues are function. So we actually covering a very broad area. Although we have, at the moment, we have a limited number of products, but actually we are supplying our products to a very broad industry, very, very broad application types at the moment. So there are pharma companies, there are biotech companies, there are academic research institutes. They all wanted to try out these products.
And what constraints can you see, if any, on your potential for growth and moving to the same scale as Abcam?
I don't see any real challenges that we'll be facing. I think that the Cambridge area has a lot to offer us. In particular, there are a lot of really talented people here, and we're looking to recruit really exceptional talented people to join our team and help us grow, and I think we couldn't be in a better location to find that talent.
This is In Your Company on Cambridge 105 with me, Sam Davis. The second business we're featuring today is Centech, a highly successful innovation and product development company specialising in the clean tech market. Like Axol, Centech has also benefited directly from the know-how and expertise distilled within an earlier generation of Cambridge firms. To find out more, I spoke to its CEO Mark England and to Marketing Director Berenice Mann. Mark, could you start by telling me a little bit about the history of Centech and in particular how it's related to some of the previous generations of Cambridge companies?
Centech was founded in 1997 by Andrew Dames and Andrew Howe, who were working at Scientific Generics. And they set Centech up with the specific objective of building a business to exploit intellectual property, so to make money out of inventions that we could patent. And I guess that they built up quite a good network of companies that we could go and work with and areas of technology that were fruitful, and felt that it was a good time to go and set off on their own with a different business model from the established consulting businesses. So the intent of the business was always to create patentable technologies and then find innovative ways to go and make money out of those. So from the more straightforward models like licensing, so somebody takes up a license to your technology and they pay you a royalty each time they make a product, through to models that actually involve things like setting up completely new businesses just to exploit a particular technology, and having those funded by external parties like venture capital.
And you joined the company in 1998, I think.
That's right, yes. So I joined about 5 months after the company was founded. And in those days, it was true startup. It was, you know, an empty office and a few desks and chairs and a couple of phones. So, you know, we really had to build it up from nothing at that point.
And how did you go about doing that?
Well, it was quite difficult to start with. The thing I remember most vividly is trying to find our first customers that were interested in talking to this tiny company that had no track record. And I think once we got the first couple, then, you know, things really started to take off, and we got our first technologies under our belt that we could start to talk about. But it was very difficult when you've got no track record in the early days.
And let's talk about the area you're active in. This is sort of generally termed smart metering, is that right?
Well, we're active in smart metering and more generally smart grid and smart energy. So it's a little bit broader than just metering.
Okay, and for the layperson, what kinds of things are we then talking about?
So you're talking about electronic products that can help track the amount of energy that you're using in your life. So on the smart metering side, that's clearly energy that's coming from your utility supply to power your heating and your goods in your house, or your consumption of water in your house. But it goes a bit further than that. So we're looking at individual monitors for appliances, for example, and the performance of whole buildings rather than just what somebody's individual energy bills might look like.
So who do you sell to then? Are these consumer products or are these into the industry itself?
So at the moment we're definitely a business-to-business company. So we're selling our technologies to companies that then make products. So in the metering case it's fairly straightforward. We're licensing our technology to meter manufacturers. For some of the other home energy opportunities, we're collaborating with companies to help build products in the home energy space. So there, again, we're not selling the products directly, but we might be selling a component of those products to those companies. And then we're also active in the next part of the smart grid, so the wires that feed power to your house. We're also involved in measuring the power flows in those as well. And in that case, we're doing business with the companies that own those wires, the so-called network operators.
And it's safe to say that you have been hugely successful with what you're doing. I know you've won a couple of Queen's Awards for industry.
That's right.
And I read that you've now got 12 million, approximately, devices installed worldwide which use your designs or your technology. Is that right?
That's right. So probably the majority of our success has come from the North American market. There are two pillars to that. One is the electricity meter deployments that we've had in the US, which really took off, I guess, in 2007-2008. There's over 10 million of those. And then more recently, which is possibly the more exciting part of our business, is the growth in smart water metering. So we think that towards the end of this year or early next year, we'll reach the milestone of 2 million smart water meters installed in the US based on our technology. And this really is a truly revolutionary product. It's the first mass deployed water meter. It doesn't have any moving parts in it at all. It's entirely battery powered.
So you're giving me some clues there as to where your business is going next. Do you see big developments in terms of this technology or in terms of how your business is going to grow over the next few years?
Well, if you look at the smart grid business or market area, that has grown quite a lot over the last 5 years. You just need to look at the number of events that are dedicated to smart grid and the number of delegates that turn up to those. So it's a very quickly growing market area, and we're poised to take advantage of that, particularly I think in the smart grid part of the business, where there is lots of very old uninstrumented cabling that powers people's houses, and we're asking it to do all sorts of new things now that we never thought it might be useful when it was installed. So people are thinking about charging up their electric vehicles on cables that were simply not designed for it. People are thinking about fitting heat pump heating instead of using gas to heat their houses. These things make a very large difference to the performance of that network. And without any monitoring or measurement of what's happening, you know, we're going to be suffering from reliability problems. So we think there's a big opportunity there across, you know, all of the world, really, but particularly, I think, in Europe and the UK for that sort of technology.
And Berenice, if I can turn to you for a second, you're a much more recent recruit to the company than Mark. Do you feel like you've joined at a particularly rich moment in terms of the opportunities ahead of you?
Yes, I think I've been quite fortunate, and the company's grown while I've been here as well. So when I started, I think there were approximately 25 people.
And when was that?
3.5 years ago. And now we are over 40 people. So it's been quite a rapid expansion during that time. And we've also taken on some new plans and some joint ventures and so on that have been really interesting. As a marketing person, you know, I've had an opportunity to brand up to new whole joint ventures that we do, which has been really exciting for me. And exciting for the business as a whole, really. You know, talking about the future of the business, they're very much where we see our revenue coming from in the future.
Right. And to come back to this perennial conversation about being in Cambridge, how do both of you think the location has helped or hindered the progress of Centec?
Well, I think Cambridge, you know, has got a really strong, recognised brand. People do understand it worldwide, that, you know, the name is known, and I think that's very helpful. And I think, you know, following last year with the Jubilee and the Olympics, the UK itself is riding high on the back of a strong brand as well. So I think those two things together work in our favour. The majority of our business is from overseas customers, particularly in our consulting areas. And as Mark has said, in the licensing revenue. So, you know, I think having a really strong brand behind us that people recognise works very well in our favour. We have a quality of people here when we're recruiting as well. You know, there's lots of people, there's a continuous stream of new graduates coming out, and some very experienced people around here as well to help with both the technology side and the business side.
So I think if you're trying to find a place to build up a technology-based company, it'd be hard to find anywhere else in the UK where you could do it so effectively. You know, in the early days, there are so many people with experience that will help you out, that will point you in the right direction, that will find you advisors or people to work with. And then as you start to build your company up, the support network of other companies around Cambridge that you need to build a technology company is, you know, it's unparalleled in the UK. So if you need you know, some rapid prototyping, for example, you can find it on your doorstep. If you need to hire some contractors to write you some software, you can find them on your doorstep. You know, and I think, you know, the only downside is that, yeah, the salaries here are a bit more expensive than they are in the rest of the country, but you get what you pay for, to be honest. So, you know, I can't imagine trying to build this sort of company anywhere else in the UK.
As a sad footnote to that interview, just a couple of days after I spoke to Mark and Berenice, it was announced that Gordon Edge, one of the iconic figures in the early development of the Cambridge phenomenon, had died. Gordon Edge was managing director of Cambridge Consultants in the late 1960s, then moved on to start PA Technology in 1970. And then, in 1986, founded Scientific Generics, the consultancy from which Centec emerged. Gordon's long and successful career as a technologist and businessman was hugely influential and exemplified the power of the network of relationships which, as we have heard, underpin the Cambridge phenomenon to this day. My thanks to all this week's interviewees for their contributions, and I'll be keeping in touch with them as their businesses progress. If you have any questions or feedback, please email us. Our address is inyourcompany@cambridge105.fm. And you can also follow us on Twitter @inyourcompany. All previous editions of In Your Company are available as podcasts on the Cambridge 105 website. Next on Cambridge 105 is The Science Show with Roger Frost and Chris Creese. Thanks for listening and goodbye.